This is Marketplace Money from APM. I'm Adrienne Hill. For the next few shows, we're putting the practical in personal finance, taking a look at how we bank, how we spend, invest, advice on what we really need to know. And this week, our theme is savings. The feds actually keep track of this. They call it personal saving as a percentage of disposable personal income, which is pretty much a fancy way of saying the personal savings rate. It was 3.2% in May, and that was the highest rate reported all year for us here in the U.S. As we talked about earlier in the show, these fluctuations often reflect larger economic trends, and maybe a little of the history of this place, of social norms. So we thought we'd take a trip to check out the saving behavior in other countries. First stop, Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Adrienne.
So the Brits, spenders or savers?
Well, there are two stories here. I mean, there's what people did before the crisis and what they've done since. Before, they went absolutely crazy. I mean, they went on a spending binge. Household debt here soared. As a percentage of GDP, it hit 170%. And the savings rate, as a consequence, fell.
What were they spending on before the recession?
The biggest driver really was houses, actually. So you can't really blame the Brits. This wasn't really fecklessness. It's because house prices just spiraled out of control.
How did the financial crisis change things? What's the second part of the story there?
You'd think that people now would start battening down the hatches and start saving a lot more because they were sweating their jobs and they were worried about the future. Actually, they've been saving even less. As a nation.
Why?
Since 2009. Now, they have to some extent been paying down their debt. And most crucially, the British government and the Bank of England have declared war on saving. I mean, they have punished the savers. They've driven down interest rates to derisory levels. So you get after tax only about 0.3 or 0.1% on a savings account.
And so what are savers doing or folks who want to save?
Well, they're doing a variety of things. They're basically not saving. I mean, that's the main thing.
They've just given up.
I think they accept the basic point here that the British government and the Bank of England say, yes, we are punishing savers. But we've got to do that. I mean, this comes back to this notion which was pioneered by the British economist John Maynard Keynes in the 20s and 30s, the paradox of thrift. It may make perfect sense for individuals to watch their pennies and to save their money, but that's not much good for an economy as a whole, which needs consumer demand, especially an economy like the UK. Nevertheless, there is a lot of resentment in the UK now that these ultra-low interest rates represent a transfer of wealth from savers to borrowers, and many savers regard that as theft.
One thing that you have there that we don't as much in the US is a more robust sort of safety net and social services that are paid for by the government a little bit more. And I wonder how that affects the savings rate.
I think it does have an influence. I think it does actually hold down the savings rate. I mean, the Brits are not saving anything like enough for a decent retirement, and public spending is coming under huge pressure. The government is now having to borrow something like $200 billion a year to pay its way. And this is a much smaller economy than the US economy. The welfare benefits and the state pensions are likely to contract over time. There is a pensions time bomb here ticking away.
Stephen Beard is the European Bureau Chief for Marketplace. Thanks so much.
It's my pleasure, Adrienne.
Next stop, the country with the world's highest savings rate, China. Why so high? Well, we called up Rob Schmitz. He's our bureau chief in China. Hi, Rob.
Hey, Adrienne.
So how much do the Chinese actually save?
I've lived in China for years, and I've got a lot of Chinese friends, and I've always been sort of blown away by how adept they are at saving money. Most people I know here put away around half their monthly salary straight into their savings.
Wow.
Yesterday, I went outside here in Shanghai. I found a shady spot away from the hot sun, and I asked a bunch of people this question, you know, what do you save? And I think this answer from Fan Qinhao, a 31-year-old who runs an office equipment company, is pretty typical. So Mr. Fan is saying here that he saves half his monthly income in case of a medical emergency. And if we were playing Family Feud, this would be the number one answer on the survey board here in China.
But I thought in China there's healthcare for everybody.
Well, you know, China does have a quote-unquote universal healthcare system that covers everyone. And it's great if you catch a cold and you need someone to take your temperature. But it doesn't cover the very things you'd want health insurance to cover, which are the most specialized and expensive medical procedures. So let's say you're riding your bike to work and you're hit by a car and you require surgery. China's state health insurance program isn't going to cover much of that. If you make an average middle-class salary in China, you'll probably have to fork out half a year's salary for the surgery and rehab. And everyone I spoke to said the one thing China's government could do to encourage them to spend more would be to have a meaningful state health insurance program that really covers everything.
Now, what happens if you don't have this savings account? What do you do?
In China, if you don't have that, you're going to have to come up with the money, because most hospitals in China will demand money up front before they even touch you.
That's quite an incentive to save. What else could the government there do to help get people spending?
Everyone I talk to puts their savings into the bank, where interest is around 3% if they're lucky, so it's not so great. Up until a couple of years ago, folks invested their money in property, but it got out of hand and created a bubble, and now fewer people can afford to buy property. And the government has limited the number of properties you can own to a person. Investing in the Chinese stock market is also very risky, so most people stay away from that. And the government also makes it difficult to invest your money into foreign markets. So people are sort of stuck with the state banks, unfortunately.
And so it sounds like the government there in China is pretty much what's standing in the way of spending and maybe encouraging all this saving. Is that right?
Yeah, it's pretty contradictory. And you know, China's new leadership under President Xi Jinping understands, I think, that the old economic growth formula of building roads, high-speed rail, and luxury condos everywhere has created a lot of waste. And in order to build a healthier, more balanced economy, it needs to get people to spend. Household income in China is equal to half the country's GDP. As comparison, household income in the U.S. is at 80% of GDP. The Chinese government owns too much of China's economy, and in order to get the Chinese to spend, it's going to have to share more of that money with the people.
Rob Schmitz is the China correspondent for Marketplace. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Adrian.
Now to our last stop, Brazil. The country is in the midst of protests over health care, education, and rising transportation costs. Brazil has also seen a rise in its middle class and a rise in income. They're using their money to buy appliances, cars, computers, and smartphones. Julia Dias Carneiro is a reporter with the BBC in Brazil. We reached her by phone in Rio de Janeiro to ask whether these newly middle class folks are saving any money now.
Well, there are lots of researches lately that show that Brazilians are not, at least it seems like it, in the habit of saving money. This seems to be visible in this new middle class. People are managing to get more money, so they're finally managing to buy things that they didn't have in the past and they didn't have in their homes. I heard of a lady the other day that bought a washing machine, paying in 24 times, so 24 installments. And she said that she wouldn't consider saving up this money during 2 years instead of paying in installments, because she was dying to have her wash machine and to be able to stop doing laundry in the tank as she had done for years and years. So it's this example of how people want to see their lives improve.
And why isn't there a culture of saving in Brazil? What is it about Brazil that maybe leads, or the history of Brazil that leads people not to be savers?
In the 70s and in the 80s, when it was the period of the military dictatorship here in Brazil, this drove to a huge hyperinflation. So in the early 80s, people really had to spend their money as fast as possible because things were devalued very quickly. I remember as a little girl, my mother, as soon as the salary came in, she'd go to the supermarket and come back with the car packed with things, because that was a day to do all the buying, because two days later, that money would already be worth a lot less. And only 10 years later, in the early 90s, there was a president here called Fernando Collor, that one of his economic plans of his government was to freeze people's savings for a certain period of time. And it was a trauma for many people, because from one day to the other, they woke up not having access to their savings. So it didn't really contribute for people to believe in that institution of putting that money there in the bank in a savings account and considering that it was safe.
Julia Diaz-Carneiro is a reporter with the BBC in Brazil. Julia, thanks so much.
Thank you, Adrian.
For more on savings rates around the world, check out our website, marketplacemoney.org.